This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to be playing for you here these next few weeks some segments from a show that I have the privilege of doing in Dallas with a doctor, Dr. Lewis Coates. And he has a family medical practice there in the Dallas area. And he just brings some great information, and I wanted to share it with our Haystack audience here as well. So again, he is not a local doctor. He's out of the Garland, Texas area, but just great health information. So we're going to join that conversation now with Dr. Lewis Coates. Dr. Coates, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it is always good to have you, and I look forward to these shows each week. And, you know, we finished up the last couple of shows with just symptoms people should not ignore. So hopefully everyone was able to catch those and a lot of different conditions there we don't want you to ignore. But we wanted to follow up with that, and you brought this up for almost the year we've been doing a show, and that's physical and the importance of getting your annual physical. So let's just kind of start out there and just kind of talk about maybe what you've seen in your practice of maybe those that didn't do that.
Yeah, and the annual physical is definitely important. And, you know, there's a lot of things we screen for. You know, people come in, and the typical physical, we get an EKG, chest X-ray. And the EKG, we're looking for heart problems. You know, it's amazing how many people come in for their annual physical, and we find, you know, atrial fibrillation. They didn't even know they were in it. Or they have some undetected heart problem that you can pick up on an EKG. Sometimes they've had a previous heart attack and didn't know they ever had one. It's pretty amazing how often you find things on the EKG. And then the chest X-ray, you know, you're looking for an enlarged heart where maybe they have congestive heart failure, they have fluid in the lungs that they don't know about. Maybe they've been short of breath for a while, and they didn't know why. They thought it was asthma, or they thought it was their smoking. And you can find an enlarged heart, some fluid, and see congestive heart failure sometimes on a chest X-ray. We found aneurysms. Sometimes you find plaque in the aorta. Some of those things can be picked up on a chest X-ray. Not always, but a chest X-ray isn't a perfect test, but it is a good screening test. The CAT scan certainly a much better test. So when someone has a lot of risk factors, we like to get CAT scans to screen them as a better test. So a heavy smoker, you know, we're looking for tumors and things that could be growing, but you can't pick all those up on a chest X-ray. So a lot of times if they're a heavy smoker, we'll order a CT scan after the physical, and we can get that to look for lung cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the simple things. Then at our clinic, we also do certain tests on the circulation. It's called ankle brachial index, ABI. And if the ABI is abnormal, that can be a sign of atherosclerosis in your blood vessels in your arms and legs. And that's a sign that if there's plaque in your arms and legs, there's usually plaque in your heart or plaque in your carotids. So someone with peripheral vascular disease, which is what we call that, when the ABI is abnormal, we really have to focus on changes, and usually it's going to be cholesterol-related or smoking-related. Sometimes diabetes plays a role in there because it definitely enhances your ability to have peripheral vascular disease. So if somebody has peripheral vascular disease, we're much more aggressive in treating their cholesterol.
Right.
So that's something that we typically look for when they come in for their physical. We get the ABI test, and we see if their circulation is good. There's another test we do at our clinic called the pseudoscan. And a pseudoscan is a simple test where it's checking the nerve conduction in your hands and feet. And so if somebody has a delayed nerve conduction, that could mean a lot of things. It could be diabetes causing that. They could have a pinched nerve in their back or in their neck that's not allowing the electricity to flow as fast through their arms and feet. That's basically what that test is measuring, is how fast the electricity goes from point A to point B. And we're trying to see if there's a delay anywhere. And if there is a delay in the conduction, then you try to figure out what is that delay. It could be something simple like carpal tunnel. We find that on physicals all the time. Hmm. And particularly in today's world, carpal tunnel is becoming more and more prominent.
Sure.
Because almost everybody's job involves computers now. And when I first got into medicine 25 years ago, you know, we usually ask people, do you, you know, work with computers? And very few said yes. Now everyone says yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we see a lot more carpal tunnel, and particularly someone who is a programmer or a secretary who's making appointments and, you know, doing all the stuff on the computer all day, then those kind of people, that can be job threatening. So if we can see early signs of carpal tunnel, we can give them things they can do, exercises that will help prevent it, and some things they can do at the workplace that can prolong their ability to work. Because that, you know, you don't, some guy thought if that's all he knows is programming and that and IT is his job, then, you know, if you take that away from him, he may not be able to make a living.
So sure.
So we screen for that on every annual physical. We also screen for, we do a CIMT, which is measuring the thickness of the carotid arteries, and we're looking to see if there's any blockage there. And that is a precursor to strokes, okay? That's one of the main things. Most people, when they come in, their biggest fear is stroke, okay? Hmm. So when patients come in, a lot of times we say, well, that could cause a heart attack. It doesn't scare them near as much as, oh, that could cause a stroke, okay? You know, people don't want strokes because they've seen people with strokes that slur their speech or in a wheelchair, can't walk. So strokes really scare patients. So we always screen the carotids. We try to do that when we can. And sometimes it's insurance driven, but we try to get around that.
Sure.
And but we try to see if there's any plaque in your carotids. The other thing that we look for is we do a sonar of the stomach on looking for aneurysms, aortic aneurysms. You know, we've talked about that and things that when we were talking about things that were bad with belly pain. Mm-hmm. If you get an abdominal aneurysm, that thing can kill you in minutes. So unfortunately, there's, you know, even if you're at the hospital, if an abdominal aneurysm ruptures, your chance of survival is very small because that vessel is so big and the blood is leaking out so fast. There's not enough blood in your circulation to keep you alive long enough for them to get in there and repair the damage, unless they have lines already in place where they're giving you blood so they're replacing what you're losing. But most of the time, you know, that's a very, very deadly thing if you have an abdominal aneurysm that ruptures. So we look for that, and if we see something that's suspicious on the screening test, then we'll get a lot of times a CT of the abdomen to get an exact measurement of the aneurysm and get you to a vascular surgeon where they can follow it on a regular basis. And once it gets over a certain size, then they'll say, hey, look, this thing's getting too big, it's at risk of rupture, so let's take you to surgery. Initially, what they do with the abdominal aneurysm is they get you on beta blockers, so it decreases the pressure, your blood pressure, and it's also decreasing the pulse rate, so it's making that aneurysm not have as much pressure inside of it, so it doesn't grow as fast. And then we aggressively treat cholesterol, because cholesterol and smoking are what weakens that wall and causes it to enlarge in the first place, for most cases.
Right.
There are some genetic causes also.
Sure, sure. So when you start out, let's just kind of start out, I guess, from the early age with kids and all. Now, it's the only time you bring kids in for physicals is when they get into sports?
Actually, no. You know, kids should come in for an annual physical every year, okay? And typically, parents are real good when they're little because they have all the shots, okay? So, you know, we see the little ones frequently, and up until age two, and a lot of times parents get a little lethargic and they don't bring them in, but we still should be seeing kids on an annual basis.
Okay.
You know, there are things that we look for and pick up, and you know, it's best for the child if he's seen at least once a year by the physician. And now the shots are going to get less frequent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a series of shots when they're a whole bunch when they're little, then there's a series at 4 and 6, and then there's a series between 10 and 12, and then 16, and then after that, there's not a whole lot of vaccines left, you know, so not on a very regular basis after that. but it is still highly recommended that we see these kids and make sure that there's nothing going on and there is no problems, there's no developmental problem. You know, that's one of the things sometimes parents don't notice is that there could be something developmentally wrong with the child. And
right.
So, you know, they just think he's, you know, short in his class, but there could be something that is potentially causing that. If mom and dad aren't short, and let's say mom and dad are average height and they're in the 50 percentile range and a child's in the 5 percentile range, then we're going to want to look at that and try to make sure that there's not something metabolically going on that's causing this kid not to grow at the same pace as the other kids in the class. And maybe sometimes it's diet related, you know, maybe he's a picky eater, maybe we have to focus on diet a little bit. But sometimes there can be metabolic disorders that could be causing that. So, yeah, having a child get an annual physical is a real good thing to do. And a lot of times that's neglected.
Right.
You know, people do think of the sports physical. And so when they get to sports and the school requires them or the team requires them to have a physical, you know, we certainly start to see them then. And the sports physical, you know, it's basically a wellness check, and you know, we check muscles and musculoskeletal system, make sure they don't have any problems with their joints, and then we check for hernia, and that's one of the things the boys don't like. You know, turn your head and cough.
Yeah.
And you know, that's when the first time you have to do it to a child, they're very uncomfortable, and unfortunately, but it is what it is. And it's certainly something that's important. If a child's playing in, you know, aggressive sports and he has a large hernia, you know, that could get incarcerated or the intestines can get stuck in the testicle, and that can be a serious thing. So,
have you found things before in your practice that kept someone, at least even for a short time, of playing?
Absolutely. That happens, I'm not going to say regularly, but we probably see – one a year that we have to disqualify, okay, maybe two, and a lot of times it can be heart problems, okay, so maybe the kid has a murmur that hasn't been properly evaluated, and we want to make sure that he doesn't have hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. That's one of the causes of sudden death in sports. So if somebody has hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, you know, a lot of times they have this real strong murmur. We get an echo, and we find out that they have an enlarged. They were born with this big enlarged heart, and unfortunately, those people have an increased risk of spontaneous death. They can just drop dead at any time from heart arrhythmias.
Wow!
And so, sports is not recommended for those people. We've also had patients come in with Marfan's disease. Marfan's is where they have tall, lanky bodies, and they have a congenital problem where they don't, it's a connective tissue problem. And so they don't make connective tissue right, and they're very suspect to aneurysms. So that child could have an aneurysm that could rupture. So contact sports are absolutely out of the question. We told that child he can play golf or he can bowl, but that's about it, okay? You know, we had to disqualify him from football, basketball, baseball. All those sports can cause potential aneurysm ruptures. So, you know, he has to play sports where it doesn't stress his heart, okay? So
gotcha.
The two sports that the cardiologist agreed on was golf and bowling, and that's pretty much, unfortunately for him, that's a genetic problem that he was born with. Sometimes we do find hernias, and they have to get them fixed, and then they can go back to sports. Sometimes we find heart problems that turn out to be benign, okay? Sometimes a kid may come in with an undiagnosed murmur, and we find out that it's just a strong flow murmur. We get the echo, and everything's fine, and then they can return to sports. But, you know, I've had some parents very, very upset with me because we disqualified their kid. We're doing it for the protection of the kid. And unfortunately, sometimes people don't see that. Their son may be the star football player, and they think we're trying to ruin his career and his life. And, you know, and unfortunately that's not the case. We're trying to protect his life is what we're trying to do.
Of course.
Once we know that there's no heart problems, he can safely resume football and go on to do whatever he wants to do. But if there is a potential problem with his heart, you know, sometimes they can't play football anymore. And, you know, I've had to deal with that before too. And, you know, that's a very difficult discussion, but, you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, the gentleman with Marfan's, because I said they're tall and they're real thin and lanky, well, he was a good basketball player, okay? And we had to tell him he couldn't play basketball anymore, you know? And that was very unfortunate. But, you know, we don't want him to die on the court.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and so unfortunately for him, you know, having Marfan's disqualified him from being able to play basketball.
Wow, that's crazy. And if you're just joining us, we are talking about the importance of annual physicals, and we've already covered kids and sports and all. And now sometimes we may apply for a job or our work may require a physical. So how different is that physical from what you might term a normal physical?
Yeah, a pre-employment physical is what we call those. And those are a little bit different. And most of those are paid for by the company that you're going to work for, okay? So let's say you're going to work for a construction company. Well, they send you over to do a pre-employment physical to make sure that you're physically fit and that you're not going to have any problems with the job. And it's kind of for the company's protection in addition to your protection, okay? If you have, for instance, some serious back problem, and then they're going to want to make sure that it's not something that will inhibit you from being able to pick up lumber and do the things that they need to do. So if you have some kind of problem like that, a lot of times that could disqualify you from a potential job. Pre-employment physicals, for instance, the hernia situation we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Maybe some guy's got a big hernia and they want that fixed before they hire him because they're worried that he won't be able to do the job and he'll miss a bunch of work because that hernia is going to get incarcerated where it gets stuck. So, you know, there are reasons usually on the company side that they require a pre-employment physical. Most pre-employment physicals have a tox screen involved, you know, and they're making sure that the employee is not on a bunch of drugs before they hire them. And so most employment physicals are going to be a little bit different because they're really more concerned about the company than they are the patient.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, so when they hire somebody, they're going to make sure that he doesn't have a bunch of pre-existing problems that they could have to pay for. So if somebody had a torn up knee and you didn't catch it on a pre-employment physical, and the first week on the job, he says his knee went out, and then he ends up having to have three surgeries and misses a bunch of work, and they're paying unemployment and work comp for all that time, and so the employer, in order to avoid those kind of situations, a lot of jobs now require pre-employment physicals. So those are pretty commonly done, but it's really the opposite of that's what makes the pre-employment physical different, is it's more protection for the company than it is protection for yourself. And I usually tell, like, I have some players, some patients in my clinic that play in the National Football League, and I'll tell them that it's important to still get their checkups with me because the checkups they're getting from the doctor on the team, he's looking out for the team.
Of course.
Not looking out for them. So, you know, you want to have, you know, your own doctor also.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Now, when someone's maybe going to be you know, not doing physical things, but maybe let's say they're going to be a truck driver. Is there anything different there with someone that's going to be driving a whole lot that you check different or just?
Yeah, the physicals they do for truck drivers is a little bit different. I used to be certified to do that. We don't do those currently at our clinic anymore because
okay.
of some of the requirements they had in order to continue to do them. I had to change the way. You have to have, for the tox screen part and the urine part, the urine test, you have to make sure that there's no water in the facility where they urinate. So you have to have a switch that turns off the sink. before they go in, and I have to redo the plumbing. So I stopped doing those a long time ago when they made that requirement.
Right.
But there are a lot of places where they do those, and basically the same things occur. The state has determined a set of guidelines that you have to meet in order to be able to drive a truck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, for instance, you can't have high blood pressure, because if you had blood pressure was significantly elevated, then that could mean, what if you had a heart attack or a stroke while you're driving an 18-wheeler and it drives through into a out of control into a playground, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these restrictions are there for a reason, to protect the public. And patients do get very upset when they go in for their physical for that, because a lot of times they fail something. Then they have to come back to me. If they fail a physical to get their CDW, which is their license to be able to drive, if they fail one of those physicals, then they'll send them to me to have to fix the problems that they found. Typically, another problem is the blood sugar. Maybe their blood sugar was too high, okay? And so if you have diabetes, it has to be controlled within a certain set of parameters before they'll let you drive. And you can't be on insulin. And the reason you can't be on insulin and drive a truck is because insulin has the potential to make your sugar drop too low real fast. If you take too much insulin by accident, you could pass out at the wheel and, once again, cause an accident.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you're a diabetic, you have to be controlled with either diet or oral medications, but you can't take insulin and still be able to pass that test. And the pilot's exam is even stricter, okay? So they have a physical that they do for airline pilots. In order to be able to fly a plane, you have a special physical that you have to get, and it's even stricter. And so those are highly regulated physicals. And anything that's abnormal, we then have to go through and make adjustments to that. So that patient, if he fails either one of those physicals, would then come to me, and he would show me what was wrong, and then we try to work around it so they can get their license back.
Gotcha. Okay, great. All right, now, those of us that have been through surgery, a lot of times there are some different things they want to check us out before surgery. So what are we looking at for pre-op?
Yeah, pre-op physical, those are pretty standard, and it's a little bit different than your annual physical, so it doesn't really replace your annual physical. But we are getting an EKG and a chest X-ray. Once again, they don't want to put somebody under that's in congestive heart failure and they don't know about it, okay? So, you know, when you're going in for an elective surgery, and when we say the word elective, that means it's something that is basically scheduled and can be moved around, okay?
Mm-hmm.
People think elective surgery as cosmetic surgery, but that's not the only type of elective surgery. Knee surgery is an elective surgery. You're not going to die if you don't get your knee fixed, okay?
Right.
You may be in a lot of pain and you may not be able to walk as well, but it's certainly not something that is life-threatening and has to be done, okay? So elective procedures are procedures that we can schedule out and we can do them whenever we want. They're not life-threatening. They can be moved around. If something is a non-elective surgery, if you go in with appendicitis, they don't send you home to do a pre-op physical. They have to fix it right away. So that's the distinguish between the two. So when someone comes in for an elective procedure, we get an EKG, we get a chest X-ray, and we're looking for heart problems, we're looking for lung problems, things that could potentially interfere with your ability to put under. We want to make sure when you're put under that you're able to wake up, okay? Now, the other things we get on a pre-op physical is we get a certain set of blood tests, okay? And on that blood test, we want to make sure your kidney functions, liver functions are good. We also want to make sure that you have a good amount of platelets. Platelets are what is your ability to clot, okay? So if they cut on you, we want to make sure that you can heal. And so if you have an extremely low amount of platelets, they're going to postpone this surgery until they figure out why your platelets are low. We'll get you to a hematologist and try to get those platelets fixed. Because if someone starts cutting on you and you have thrombocytopenia, which is a term for low platelets, that means that you're going to keep bleeding and they're not going to be able to stop the bleeding, and you could bleed to death during the procedure. We also do a couple of tests called a prothrombin time and a partial prothrombin time. We call it a PT and a PTT. and those are tests that look for bleeding disorders. Okay, we want to know if you have some bleeding disorder before we put you under, because that's, once again, that could cause a bleeding problem. The surgeon doesn't want to be halfway through the procedure and find out that you have a bleeding disorder and they can't control the bleeding.
Right.
You know, that can be very, very deadly. And if they don't have enough blood products, you know, you're in big trouble. So if somebody does, for instance, have a bleeding disorder and they have to have knee surgery, then we're going to work with the hematologist. We're going to order a whole bunch of extra blood before the procedure so that there's precautions taken in place so that we can safely do that procedure, even though they have some type of bleeding disorder. So there are things that can be done if the surgery is deemed that necessary. At that point, you have to weigh the risk and the benefits. How bad is this problem the patient's having, and how risky is this procedure going to be? But so we need to know those things before the surgery is ever done. So pre-op physicals are very important, and they're required for almost every surgery now. When I first got into medicine, we didn't require them for eye surgeries and things. Unfortunately, I still don't think that an eye surgery really needs a pre-op physical, but that's not my decision.
Okay? Right, right.
Unfortunately, I tell the patients that your insurance and the anesthesiologist in today's highly litigious world that we live in, mm-hmm. pretty much very few people are going to get cut on without having a pre-op physical. The anesthesiologist is going to want it. The surgeon's going to want it. And it's a liability issue, so almost every surgery now requires a pre-op physical. And so those will be things that if you're planning on having your shoulder fixed or your knee fixed, or if you have gallbladder disease and they plan on taking your gallbladder out at some point, they're going to send you over for a pre-op physical before they do the surgical procedure.
Right. And we have been talking about the importance of physicals. And so, boy, we've got a couple of things we were going to try to get into today, but we're just about out of time on different things with males and females. So maybe we can catch that next week, Dr. Coates. And then if it's all right, we've been through several weeks now of the vaccine and a lot of things. So I know you get a lot of questions on that. So next week we'll kind of update everybody on kind of what's going on and what you're seeing in your practice there with COVID and the vaccine and medications that are working and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be a great show next week, sir.
All right.
That was Dr. Lewis Coates. And once again, if you're just joining us, Dr. Coates' practice is in Garland, Texas. We do a show each week there in the Dallas area called Better Health, and he just shares some great information. So I wanted to share it with you, our Haystack audience. You're listening to KLZ 560. We got to take a short break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Got a question for the station? Email info@CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome to Protect Your Legacy with Attorney Blake Harris. Their show is brought to you by Mile High Estate Planning. Be sure and check out that website, and we'll tell you a few things about the website here before we get out of this segment today, but it is milehighestateplanning.com. And the number, 833-ASK-BLAKE. And with that, we will welcome Blake Harris. How are you, sir?
Scott, I'm doing great, and I'm excited for today's show. It's a very exciting topic for me, and I think for a lot of the listeners as well.
Well, it is, and I tell you, a lot of people have heard us and said, boy,
He said, I need to educate myself on this, and I've been doing it on this matter of cryptocurrency. And probably the most famous one that most people have heard a little bit about is Bitcoin. So let's just kind of break it down for our audience today of, you know, what is Bitcoin?
So Bitcoin is a digital online currency. Bitcoin occupies about 90% of the overall cryptocurrency market. So of the various digital online currencies that are not backed by any government, there's no tangible form of them in existence. There's thousands of different types of cryptocurrency. The biggest one is Bitcoin, occupying about 90% of the market. The second biggest one is Ethereum, which occupies about 7% of the market. And then all the other thousands of cryptocurrencies combined represent the remaining 3%. All of them are battling it out to be the dominant player. And I suspect many of them will be around for quite some time. Lots of them will fall apart and disappear, but a few of them will continue to be passed around probably indefinitely going forward, just as right now we've got the dollar, the euro, the peso. There's a few different currencies right now in the fiat form. We have a few different digital currencies, but yes, Bitcoin is the biggest player. Bitcoin has been the best performing asset of the last decade, grown nearly 200% every year for the past 10 years. It is hot right now. It is on a bull run and getting a lot of attention. My prediction, we'll get more into my predictions shortly, I think it's going to continue to appreciate.
Really? What makes it, you know, such a hot commodity and growing so fast?
Sure. So there's two things about it that make it such a hot commodity. Number one is that it is decentralized, meaning that there's no central government backing it, which also means that it can't have anybody inflate it. The U.S. dollar has been inflated quite a bit over the course of our life. It's going to continue to inflate. And what I fear and what I suspect is we may face hyperinflation in the United States. Certainly some other countries are going to have this issue. Bitcoin cannot inflate. There's only a limited supply of Bitcoin. There's 21 million available Bitcoins, and there will never be any more than that. Some Bitcoins have been lost, permanently lost or destroyed, and so there's only a deflationary pressure. It can be transported. It can be sent all over the world nearly instantaneously, and there's no middleman. There's no banks that get in between. This is a peer-to-peer transaction network. And it's also very widely used. There's approximately 61 million Bitcoin holders in the world right now, meaning if Bitcoin were a country, it would be about the 21st largest country, somewhere between the size of France and Italy, also meaning that it's got a lot of room to grow.
Wow. Okay. Now, so I guess next question, would you recommend buying it?
So I'm not recommending making any investment decisions right whatsoever, Scott. I'm an attorney. I will give legal advice. I'm not going to make any recommendations as to whether anyone should buy Bitcoin. Personally, I have bought Bitcoin, and I'm going to continue to. My children, I've got 8-year-old boy-girl twins. For their college savings, I'm putting it into Bitcoin, and I think that's going to be the best investment in the coming decade as more and more people flock to using Bitcoin. This year, we've seen a number of major changes. Credit card companies that give cash back in the form of Bitcoin. PayPal is allowing people to purchase Bitcoin. The city of Miami has made an initiative to start paying their employees in Bitcoin and allowing people to pay taxes and fines and fee in Bitcoin. Walking down the street the other day, I even had a homeless person ask for a donation in the form of Bitcoin. Pretty soon, we're going to see a replacement of cash. I believe we're going to see a replacement of cash and move into Bitcoin. Right now, Bitcoin trades around $50,000 a coin. You don't have to buy a whole coin. You can buy $5 worth of Bitcoin or $10 worth of Bitcoin. You can buy fractions of a Bitcoin. And it is a volatile market. It's been a very volatile market with several crashes, and it's going to remain a volatile market. There will be many more crashes coming, crashes up and crashes down. But if I were to make a 10-year prediction, I would say that the
$50,000 Bitcoin is likely to go to $500,000 or even $1 million per Bitcoin. So for someone seeking investment advice, go talk to an investment advisor. My advice, though, is educate yourself. And here's what I hear too often. I ask every client of mine, do you own cryptocurrency? What cryptocurrency? How do you store the key to that cryptocurrency? And the answer I get most of the time is no. I say, why not? The response is, well, I don't understand it yet. I equate this to being on the Titanic and somebody scream, jump on a lifeboat. And then I hear somebody respond with, well, I don't understand how lifeboats work. Well, you need to understand how lifeboats work. You need to understand, at least have a basic understanding of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. So if it means going out and buying $20 worth of Bitcoin to get yourself to pay attention to it, go do that. Beyond that, I'm not making any investment recommendations. I am making recommendation that you educate yourself on it.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Protect Your Legacy with Attorney Blake Harris of Mile High Estate Planning. 833-ASK-BLAKE is the number. And once again, the website, milehighestateplanning.com. Now, you mentioned the other digital currencies like Bitcoin, and you say there's really thousands of them?
There's thousands of them. And they're all different they all differentiate themselves in certain ways. Transaction fees, the speed at which transactions are verified. And then there's also something called smart contracts, which is what Ethereum kind of prides itself on, that it can tie itself into a contract. So instead of simply being able to send Bitcoin back and forth, Ethereum can be set up so that when somebody steps into your store, they're automatically charged to Ethereum. When somebody purchases a piece of real estate or when somebody passes away and a death certificate is issued, Ethereum will recognize that and automatically take the money that an individual holds and see that they've passed away and distribute that money into separate trusts for each of the beneficiaries.
Okay, very interesting. Any other advice or predictions for the future of this cryptocurrency?
So I do have some advice, and believe it or not, it relates to estate planning. There are three ways of passing your cryptocurrency that I've come across, and I'm constantly reading and learning more and more about this subject, but three ways to pass your cryptocurrency. Number one is to find somebody you trust with your password. Find somebody who you trust with the key to your password. If you have a family member or friend that you're not worried about stealing away your cryptocurrency, that would be the most cost-effective and the easiest option. The second option is to use a safe deposit box at a bank, but I don't recommend putting your cryptocurrency password or key directly in that bank vault. The good thing about the bank vault is after you pass away, the personal representative can go through the court. The court will give the letters of representation, the PR letters, in a probate proceeding to somebody who can open that safe deposit box. But having your key right there in the safe deposit box means that potentially the bank could be robbed or a banker could steal it for themselves. What I would recommend doing is having inside that safe deposit box a combination for a lock that you keep in your home, and inside of your home is where somebody can find your cryptocurrency. It can then have a password that you can use to get off an exchange, or it can be kept in cold storage. You can store it basically on a USB drive that you keep inside of a locked safe, which the code to that is held inside of a safe deposit box at a bank. That's option number two. Then option number three is to hire a trust company. You can hire a professional trust company to store your keys, store your cryptocurrency for you, and then upon you passing away, they will automatically pass that key down to your family members. You can also, so that's the estate planning side of cryptocurrency. Number one, find somebody you trust with the key. Number two, use a bank safe deposit box. Or number three, pay somebody who you trust to hold the key. The other side of cryptocurrency is asset protection. Just as your home, your bank account can be lost in a lawsuit, you could also potentially lose your cryptocurrency due to a lawsuit or divorce, which is why I recommend setting up an asset protection trust. We've talked about asset protection a few times on your show, on our show, Scott, and what we do for a cryptocurrency is we'll have first form an LLC, simple LLC registered with the Secretary of State of Colorado, and then have that LLC owned by the asset protection trust. In certain cases, we can let the client serve as the trustee, so you don't need to get any third parties involved. You just want to make sure that we have somebody else who holds the key as well, or that we're doing the bank deposit option. Or we can set up an asset protection trust where there's a third-party trust company who holds the key. That then accomplishes both the estate planning aspect of protecting the estate planning aspect of passing your cryptocurrency to your beneficiaries, but it also gives the added benefit of asset protection, meaning that nobody can take that cryptocurrency away from you after you pass away. One more thing to add with cryptocurrency is taxation of cryptocurrency. The IRS views cryptocurrency as property, not currency, which means that if you put money into cryptocurrency and it appreciates, you're going to have to pay capital gains tax on it. If you hold your cryptocurrency for less than a year, then you're going to have to pay at your ordinary income tax rates. If you hold your cryptocurrency for more than a year, then you can pay long-term capital gains rates, which are generally much lower than short-term capital gains rates. And this is an area that we suspect is going to continue to change in the eyes of the IRS. What I don't see happening is the government coming out and just outright banning cryptocurrency. Part of the reason why is, by many accounts, the U.S. government is one of the biggest holder of Bitcoin. They want more people to go out and buy it. This will help make the U.S. government wealthier. They are not pushing it hard, but they're not trying to eliminate it either. So those are other things to consider. If you have cryptocurrency and you want to discuss estate planning for it, my firm can certainly help with that. If you have cryptocurrency and want to talk about asset protection or tax planning, we have all the tools necessary to plan for that as well. And the next question is, how do we accept payment? Of course, check or credit card, but our firm is happy to take payment in the form of Bitcoin, Ethereum, or other cryptocurrencies as well. We are accepting payment in forms of cryptocurrency. If you run a business, I recommend that you set up a business account as well, and you offer cryptocurrency as a means of payment. There are certain people who, if they're on the fence about working with you and you accept cryptocurrency, they will take payment and they will make payment in Bitcoin.
Wow.
Maybe a value, a price that they could get a better deal at. And there's a lot of people, you don't know who they are, the neighbor next door, that may be sitting on hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in cryptocurrency, and they are excited to find ways that they can spend it without having to convert it into cash first.
Sure. Well, Blake, I tell you what, I hope our audience will take heed here. Man, a lot to know, and boy, it's great that you're willing to offer a free consult for our listeners here to protect your legacy. And again, the number is 833-ASK-BLAKE, but a lot to know. And as with most of this in the area of estate planning and financial world, hey, mistakes will cost you money, so don't make them. Blake Harris is here ready to help you. Again, you can check out the website at milehighestateplanning.com. So, Blake, hey, we thank you for your time, sir, and we'll look forward to our visit next week.
Hey, Scott, look forward to be back on the show. And just one more thing to mention. If you want more information on cryptocurrency, of course, my website, milehighestateplanning.com, and my YouTube channel, Mile High Estate Planning, has a lot of information on that as well. Thanks for chatting, and look forward to talking to you again soon, Scott.
All right. You as well, sir. That is Blake Harris, milehighestateplanning.com, 833-ASK-BLAKE. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, Jack Corgan for Len Lyle Chevrolet. Len Lyle Chevrolet is open and safe. It's truck month, and they have the best deals of the year on all trucks and SUVs, like up to $10,000 off on half-ton Silverados. Or come check out the all-new Tahoes and Suburbans for 2021. Len Lyle has been there for 35 years, and low overhead really does mean low prices. Check them out on the web, LenLyleChevy.com. Go east and pay the least. Chevy. Find new roads.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. More people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves, who they are, what are their feelings. I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David Cishon of Householder Group, 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. Glad to have our good friend Alan Stack from Stack Optical back in studio. Alan.
Been a long break, buddy.
Well, family owned and operated has a new meaning, because right now it's husband and wife operated,
that's
right?
That's right. Yeah, we run. So what we're doing is, I've been doing a lot of repairs from the chains, and I'm also, a lot of these chains too, I didn't realize it takes weeks to get your glasses. They're coming in, and I tell them it'll be a few days. They just can't believe that. Well, we've always had our own lab. We do everything on premises. And, my wife runs the business out of the home, takes all the phone calls, sets up appointments for me. I usually go down there a couple times a day.
Right.
And we try to bunch them all together. But, I'm just offering the awesome service. That's what it's about.
Well, and, I think it has become on the forefront over the last few months, and we hear it everywhere, is small business. And that covers all of us just about. But I tell you, I think we have seen a resurgence where people are understanding, hey, our friends and neighbors' livelihoods depend on them doing business with us,
Well, and not only that, but you're also getting so much better service.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
we really care about these people.
Sure.
And I'm finding out about these chains and the stories. I've never had so many people come in that have been going to those places,
mm-hmm.
because we've never been in that realm.
Right.
But these people were kind of forced to search me out because they were closed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come in and see the difference. They just didn't think people like us still existed.
Right.
It's been an eye-opening experience for both the client and me.
Right. And I've had several people in, quote, the medical world and doing things like you do. And, you could have closed and taken a few months off. But you know what? You've got patients and people
depend on us.
Depend. I mean, right. They can't see without
exactly.
You. That's a big burden for you to be there when they need you.
Well, especially that first month or so, we had a lot of healthcare workers that, went back to whatever chain it was, and they couldn't do anything for them. They had to have something. They had to go to work their 12-hour shift.
Sure.
So I was using selling defogger. I was taking their old lenses and fitting them into other frames because their frame was broken. And I was able to do it on the spot so they could make their shift.
Mm-hmm. And I bet you heard this a lot, too, because, when people go to these chains and they walk in and they never know the qualifications of the person behind the counter helping them,
right.
That's number one.
Yes.
Okay. But I bet they're like, I didn't even know places like you existed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I was finding. All the different stories. Well, nobody told me about that type of a lens. They didn't tell me that was available, and the difference in the types of frames, and also our doc. Our doc said, Alan, let's just mask up and we'll do eye exams.
Right.
These people have to have being able to see. So we did eye exams all the way through this as well.
Well, good. And they're located, folks, at 2233 South Monaco. Their number's 303-321-1578. It is Stack Optical. And, Alan, when you talk about the care, and that's what I think everybody's really looking for these days, is just getting that individualized care, because there's no two sets of eyes are the same, and none of our conditions are the same. And that's why you got to get that custom care
that you can offer?
Well, I'm in kind of a unique situation because of all this. You know, we had a flood in our office in February, and that took 3 weeks to dry all that out. And right when we get everything back to normal, COVID hit. It was just a double whammy. It's like somebody's trying to tell me something. So, you know, we had to let our employees go, and Marilyn said, hey, she can run this part out of the house, and I could go ahead and do the part at the optical. And actually, it's been good because I've kind of reconnected.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. Sure. Really enjoyed this. And, I mean, not the premise.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
I really feel like we're doing a good service down there, mm-hmm. helping the folks out.
And all the different things that you can offer there at Stack Optical. And we talk about the Stack Sports Pack here and on our Sportsman of Colorado show. But walk us through the Stack Sports Pack.
So the Stack Sports Pack, that's a really kind of a cool frame that we can change out the lenses in seconds. So you might get the frame and get maybe a couple different types of lenses. Maybe you'll get one for shooting. Maybe you'll get one for golfing, another one for driving. And each one of those requires a different type of lens for, you know, seeing that front sight on iron sights or being able to see that golf ball. You want a brown lens out on the golf course. And then driving, you know, a gray lens is your best. So there's different types of lenses for depending on what you're doing. And what's nice about that type of frame, you switch out the lenses in seconds. It's also adjustable in the field. So if you need to tighten it up, you don't have to heat it up. You can just wrap the temples.
Mm-hmm.
You can also adjust the bridge. It's a really neat, versatile frame.
No, I'll tell you, I love it. And, you know, you make everything look really easy because of your profession. But what I was shocked at, how quick I could change out the lenses,
right.
too, because, like I say, you know exactly what you're doing. But it is extremely simple.
Yes.
And you don't need to.
The frame was designed with the patient in mind, not
right.
the optician.
Yeah. And that's the big difference right there. Yeah. Once again, it's Stack Optical, 2233 South Monaco, 303-321-1578. And as we mentioned on our Sportsman of Colorado show with Alan, too, you know, a lot of people are going to be out shooting. Gun sales have been through the roof.
Yeah.
Ammo sales. And so, you know what, if you're thinking about, man, I just can't see those sites like I used to, Alan, if they make an appointment, and, of course, bring in your firearm unloaded, but you want to see how they handle that and looking down the sights.
Right,
and
right. And I've got a sample pair there that I can kind of play with and kind of demonstrate it for you.
Okay.
Of what it's like.
Good deal. And Alan M. will take great care of you. Now, you mentioned your doctor, and a couple of months back, I came in, did my eye exam.
Right.
And, you know, and what I like about him, I mean, he is so thorough, you know, with everything. And mine had changed just ever so slight, but yet, I mean, you really feel like you got a good medical eye exam when you walk out of there.
Yeah, no, Dr. McMillan is just, he's been awesome. You know, he's been doing it for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot out there he hasn't seen. And he takes the time. Yeah, sometimes we might get a little bit behind because he's not going to rush anybody.
Right.
And he's going to answer your questions. And, you know, you think about it, being able to see a doc from the beginning to the end of the eye exam.
Mm-hmm.
We're not using techs. You're only going to see the doc for the eye exam. And he only charges $69.
No, I mean, I was really thought, really, $150.
But he's
bucks.
Into it for the patient care, not the money.
Exactly.
You know, he just loves what he does.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, man, your location now, and I think back when you said, Scott, I got to move. I mean, you thought the world was coming down on you, but you know what?
I know it's worked out
the
well.
The sun rose again there.
I know, but we were in that old medical building in Cherry Creek. It's just, I grew up there.
Yeah.
I was a kid running up and down the halls in the 60s when Dad opened up the store, you know. And then, you know, to leave that building, that was tough.
Oh, absolutely. But I tell you, the of course, free parking.
Right.
A ton of it.
Right.
And literally feet from the front door. So it makes it very accessible.
Oh, yeah, it's very accessible. And, of course, we have a much larger retail now in the exam room. Is huge. It's twice the size of the old exam room, you know, and have a nice new modern lab with all the latest equipment, you know. So, yeah, no, it's a beautiful office.
And another thing too, motorcycles. Though you can
and
put some different
I have
some
quite a few
lenses.
Different types of motorcycle glasses. You know, I have wraps. I have these different sports glasses that work well under a helmet, or if you're wearing one of those half helmets, you know, they're really nice as far as keeping the wind out, and you can tighten them up or loosen them. They come with straps, and there's a lot of different options for motorcycle glasses.
Yeah.
Or biking glasses.
Sure. And another thing, last couple of minutes here, but another cool thing you guys do is if people have difficult prescriptions, that's something that you can really help out with.
Yeah. I've been working with difficult prescriptions my whole life. That's actually what I live for. I love the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I see something unusual, there's so many different ways that I can manipulate that to make it for the best vision possible.
Right.
And there's so many new products out there. You know, you would think, oh, it's eyeglasses. What can be new about eyeglasses? We're constantly redesigning and digitizing lenses to make them even clearer. And they constantly are improving our anti-reflective coatings to make them easier to clean, make them stronger. They don't scratch easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, the frame materials are the same way. They've improved those. We've got them very lightweight now. And I can take somebody who has a Coke bottle prescription.
Right.
And they'll be amazed at what I can do with that now. I can make that so much lighter and more comfortable.
Cool.
And see better.
Yeah, absolutely. And repairs. You know what?
Yeah.
I
have done need so repairs. Many yeah. repairs. That was the first couple weeks into this. The repairs were huge. People were coming in, and I was taking their lenses and fitting them into another frame. But I can do it while they wait. They can't get that anywhere.
Right.
And also, if I have to make a complete pair, I was getting them in a day or two, which you can't get that anywhere.
Sure.
So, yeah, being able to do everything.
Absolutely.
That's what I do.
Well, listen, Stack Optical is really, truly, if not the last, they are one of the last family-owned, optician-owned stores, 2233 South Monaco. Folks, get the personal service you deserve. And as we talked about, that we really want to support, you know, small businesses. And you know what? There's not much we can't do online. But a lot of people talk about saving money online. And let me tell you, we could do another whole segment on what you perceive to be saving money and not get the right fit and right glasses, Alan.
That's right.
You know, and that's what's more expensive, when you can't see. They don't work. And then you got to send them back and back and
yep.
back,
yep.
you know. And they can come there. Hey, I've been there. You have to make one little bitty change. You walk back in your lab, put on your lab coat, and make a change and come back and hand them to me.
That's right.
So, man, that's awesome.
Thank you, Scott.
So get out and support Alan and his wife. Again, these folks have been great here for our state even, and right here in the Denver area, serving many generations now, Alan.
That's right.
Yep, with Stack Optical. Again, 2233 South Monaco, 303-321-1578, 303-321-1578. Tell you what, we're going to do something a little special here today. First person that comes in and talks to Alan gets a medical exam for $69 and buys glasses. Haystack Help will pay for your eye exam. All right?
Okay.
So here's what we're going to do. First person that comes in. So, Alan, you let me know.
Okay.
You call me while they're there.
Okay.
I'm going to pay for their eye exam.
All right.
They'll pay for their glasses.
All right.
All right? We're going to give that a shot. 303-321-1578, Stack Optical. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and leave it right here on KLZ 560.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.